Bill's game comes in Grim Santa. A box you rain when you ask.
Who's this from?
Merry Christmas and welcome to the Hellbound Alley program. This is Allie.
Yes.
And with me is the Frank. Lovely Francois.
And you always say my name the correct French way instead of.
But that's how you say it.
How they say it when I go in the South. They say Francois.
Well, that's how it's pronounced in the South.
Funny people down there.
You're talking about Atlanta.
Yeah.
Yeah, you lived in Atlanta for a summer and worked for.
It was
like
actually
a car dealership.
A small city called Sandersville.
Oh yeah.
So if anyone lives in Sandersville, say hello to Jimmy Childrey for me.
And you were out there. You were out there golfing and stuff, having a good old time.
Yeah.
With the good old boys. It's just hard for me to imagine. I have to see the pictures to believe it.
What do you mean?
That you were down in Georgia.
Definitely.
Because you don't seem to be the Georgia type, but hey, you know.
Not at all.
The infidel guy is a Georgia type, so what can you say?
Well, I can say plenty of things, but.
But I did say Merry Christmas, but I also meant the solstice and seasons and. Whatever else, unless it's religious, and then I don't need to say it.
Well, we are going to talk about the whole Happy Holidays ring-a-mole. But first, we have some important station news.
Mm-hmm.
We have two new shows on our schedule. And we have our new show is called Vox Populi, The Voices of Atheism. It's basically a group that we have assembled of intelligent, opinionated atheists who want to answer questions. It's a bi-weekly feature, and we got some interesting questions. If you want to listen to the first episode, it's up on our archive page and on the show's own page. We made a page for the show, so you can check it out. Episode 1 is up, and I think you'll like it. I think most people... even people don't necessarily like our show are going to like this one.
Sure, they're great questions.
Yeah, it's questions that I think interest everyone, regardless of your philosophical...
It's kind of funny, right after we finished doing the first program, I discovered the Five Questions podcast, and I was like... Wow.
we
came up with a really great idea that had already been done, but this one is for atheists.
Well, yeah, it's not quite the same thing, though. Because on our show, we have a specific group of five people who we already know are good, and they record their own stuff themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And the show formula is different too. But yeah, also it's for atheists. So we talk about philosophical, social, personal issues, you know, from an atheistic perspective. And I think, I call it the voices of atheism because that's what I want it to be. I want it to be a place where we have a team. It might change in the future, you know, people are going to come and go. But where we have a team of people who are basically expressing different opinions, different, you know,
mm-hmm.
about various topics that interest all atheists. Well, most of them. I don't know if they interest all atheists. I'm sure some atheists don't give a shit.
Well,
it's just fun.
You're interested enough to actually call yourself an atheist, you tend to be interested in topics like that.
You know, it's just fun and it makes you think, and so I think it's interesting. And our second show is not from us. It's from a guy called Stephen Molyneux, and he's from Ontario. And he's very intelligent. And he has podcasts, and we're broadcasting them on our station. So I would really encourage you, if you're a libertarian, which I hope you are, I would really encourage you to listen to these podcasts. So the schedule of this is right now, Vox Populi is playing at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, and Molly News playing at 4:30.
Yeah, and he has his own blog and website where you can also download his podcasts, or you can find them on other podcast directories like Podcast Pickle. And right next to ours, there are 11 atheistic shows on Podcast Pickle and most podcast directories. Two of them are ours. Well, three, actually 12 now. So three of them are ours and one is his.
Yeah.
We've got Infidel Guide and Nonprofits and us, you know?
Yeah. So I want to encourage you to listen to both of these new items because I think they're very, very interesting. And it might do a change from our shows, which are more, you know, the recorded shows we do are more...
well, it's us.
Yeah, more... oriented towards specific issues, while the Vox Populi show is more of a grab bag. But I think it's very interesting.
Yeah, the first show you'll hear people talk about why they're atheists, for one thing. So
yeah.
Those kinds of topics that we're starting off with.
There are four questions every show that people answer, so you'll hear their answers for each question.
Well, it was interesting when I was editing it, so.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, we don't have much time to talk about this, but unfortunately, because it's an interesting topic. But do you say Merry Christmas or Happy Holidays?
Well, I say Merry Christmas, but only because I'm not interacting with people I know to be of a specific religion who definitely will not celebrate certain holidays, and of course, I used to be around Orthodox Jews and Jehovah's Witnesses, and you don't even want to say Happy Holidays to a Jehovah's Witness, but season's greetings or Happy Holidays is pretty good at the office. But for me, it's easy enough to say Merry Christmas, and to me, of course, it means my secular atheistic holiday, mm-hmm. not Jesus.
Because
I don't care. I mean, I don't care if somebody wants to celebrate solstice and call it solstice, because I don't think people really know what I know to be Christmas. So
because a lot of people in the American media have declared war against people who say Happy Holidays. And what do you think about that?
Well, for one thing, I think that it's showing Christians to be discriminatory against other Christians as well. But, you know, which is very telling. It's
right.
A Christian thing as long as it's not, you know, Jehovah's Witness or Seventh-day Adventist.
It's funny because they were talking about how the White House card said Happy Holidays and Laura Bush... said Happy Holidays.
What's happening is Christians are turning the greeting Merry Christmas into a political weapon. And from what I hear, from what I read on the web, if people say Happy Holidays, they immediately get shot down and scolded. No, you have to say Merry Christmas. And I know you do that sometimes, but for a completely different reason.
Well.
But it's like...
I don't mind.
People are signing their cards, Merry Christmas, God damn it, and you better like it when I say Merry Christmas. You know, it's like, well, basically it's kind of a Jew-hating thing to me.
It's not that I don't mind, it's not that I don't like Happy Holidays, it's just that atheists do it for the wrong reason.
Yeah.
They think Christmas is a Christian holiday.
Right.
Which is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, that's pretty...
It has no basis in fact whatsoever. And they're basically repeating the lies of the Christian media. And we're going to talk about that, right?
Well, there's so many levels
to this. Are we
going to
talk about
that? Sure, yeah. There's just so many levels to this, but what I want to talk about on the show
I don't
is
have any levels why, about it. It's why, a lie.
What I'm going to talk about is why, specifically, Christmas is now a secular holiday. Mm. That's, like, the main thing I want to talk about.
Yeah.
But it's dumb, and you know what? People, normal people, people who are like not atheists and not Christians because they just don't give a damn, they don't care. And they think it's funny, they think people are stupid.
Yeah, I don't think they do.
The general public thinks that Christians are idiots for doing it. And the thing is, businesses succumbing to this is ridiculous because we recently read an article that actual boycotts don't work, but the threat of boycotts do. So,
exactly.
You know,
it's
we can threaten
that's
a boycott.
All it is.
Well, let's threaten a boycott ourselves, you know?
No, we aren't big enough, though. We don't need an organization of atheists. Like, if American atheists actually decided to boycott some organizations, that might work.
Perhaps. But, yeah, but maybe businesses are starting to get wise. For one thing, certain businesses have reversed their decisions to succumb to the Christian right. Like, the Ford Motor Company reversed its butt licking because they had done an ad in a gay magazine.
Right.
And they were threatened with a boycott. They stopped. And then they went back and did it again. They said, this isn't worth it. This is stupid. And the Ford Motor Company is not going down. And they should know better than that. You know, Microsoft. They're not going... The Christian right is not going to bring down Microsoft.
No, they're...
They need to stand up. I mean, Microsoft is headed by the richest atheist, the richest person...
Yeah, the richest atheist in the world.
The richest person. And
if it was 300 years ago, they could have taken down a giant corporation.
It could have happened in the
today.
50s. I mean,
you think so?
Well, in the 50s, you know, this is when people assumed everything was Christian to begin with. In the 50s, that's when they added "In God We Trust."
No, that was because of the Cold War.
Right, I know, because it was anti, you know... Russia, which part of it was anti-atheist, and I think Christians are sort of, it's like a separation of church and state thing to them, you know, it's like, they see themselves losing their grip on the country, and it's a backlash.
Why, in the U.S., yeah, in the U.S., they're
even
still
though
in the process
they have
of
a
losing.
plenty heavy grip. I mean, we know what the percentage is. And so when they cry attack, war, and persecution, just look at the numbers and stop crying, you stupid crybabies. Like, what's the percentage of people who believe that God made us 6,000 years ago from dust?
If you were
stop being fucking crybabies
about
this.
If you were
this.
In England, I would understand. In Scandinavia, even in Quebec. But in the U.S., no, I think that's silly. Anyway, the How About Ally show is available on Free Thought Radio at 7 p.m. on Saturday and 8 p.m. on Sunday. And on the How About Ally station every evening. Our live show is on every Sunday starting at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. And tomorrow we'll have another call-in challenge.
Cool.
Why don't you give our coordinates?
Well, our website is at hellboundalley.com, and you can email us at ally@hellboundalley.com. That's ALLEE.
So the title of our show today, because we want to make a point, the title of our show is Christmas, the Atheistic Holiday. Now,
wants to make that perfectly clear.
I think some people understand that, and I've been trying to hammer that point home on my blog. I think some atheists understand that. Some atheists just don't understand it. Even big bloggers, you know, out there,
mm-hmm.
you know, just don't get it. And a lot of people don't get it. So we're going to really explain this, you know, once and for all, I hope.
Well,
Christmas is not, has nothing to do with Christianity. It might as well have to do with Zoroastrianism. It probably has more to do with Zoroastrianism than Christianity.
No.
No? Okay, then it has as much to do.
Well, now, I talked about this for 2 flipping hours last year. So, of course, you know, I thought maybe it would put the issue to rest, but apparently it hasn't. I have not changed the world about about this.
Oh, you will.
But I would suggest a re-listen to that 2-hour program where I talked about the origins of Christmas and the pagan origins of Santa Claus. Santa Claus did not come from St. Nicholas. Anyway, what we're talking about is, like you said, the big bloggers out there, they're just wondering, why should an atheist celebrate Christmas? Why shouldn't an atheist celebrate December 25th? Well, like I said, we've been through the pagan origins of Christmas, Santa, and St. Nicholas, but it's been asked, why should an atheist celebrate a pagan holiday, since an atheist is generally not a pagan?
Why not? It's atheistic.
Exactly. That's the point. There are many reasons. Basically, in antiquity, gods were honored, yes, but basically, the solstice celebration, which is the origin of all of the Christmas celebrations and the Christmas-related celebrations, right down to Hanukkah, of course, it's not based on a scripture. It's not based on any kind of a command from a leader of a church to celebrate on a particular day. Now, there are certain people that later on said, well, this is the day that we call this day. But it's not about celebration. Solstice, Christmas is based, well, from the beginning, it's based on the facts of nature. This is the basic reason why Christmas is secular. The facts of nature, like the sun, which really exists, and the sun always, quote, returns.
Does it really?
You know, in a way, it returns. The sun, the solstice, has always been, or the celebration, has always been sort of a ray of light in darkness.
The first thing is that this is not something that started, you know, in the 4th century, 3rd century BCE, you know? This is something that has existed for millennia,
mm-hmm.
You know, way before all of these, you know, in the Old Testament, they prohibit the celebration of Christmas.
Right.
So how can it have started with the Christians in the 4th century? Come on, think, people.
What I'm saying is solstice, the celebrating of the winter solstice or the time of the winter solstice does not originate with a religion or a worship. It originates with human nature. This is something that was always going to happen, and in a deterministic way, if there are humans, there's going to be a Christmas, basically, or you can call it a solstice, the celebration. And when I say this celebration is a ray of light coming into the darkness, this is where you can infuse secular meaning into such a celebration. This symbolizes my values, illuminating the figurative darkness. This is definitely an atheistic value. Like Carl Sagan in his book, you know, science is a candle in the dark. Anyway, it's, you know, that the season is not celebrated particularly for gods. Even when we have various gods who are born on such a day, they have been placed to be born on such a day, the season is marked by things we still do today and that have nothing to do with gods or religions or anything like that. I mean, hardly anyone, I don't, except for maybe crazy people, say that the tree, the holly, the mistletoe are used in pagan rituals. Do people, I mean, sure, I suppose the fringe pagans today will use it in rituals, but who uses a holly and the ivy and the Yule log and the tree? Normal, regular, everyday people who are not looking at the tree and saying, the tree is a god. Even some pagans are going to say, of course we don't think the tree is a god. You know, why do we bring in a tree? Why do we bring in the holly?
Because it's a symbol of constant, eternal vigor.
Well, this, you know, you could say this is a pagan thing. Therefore, why are Christians doing it? Well, I'll tell you why Christians do it. It's because it's beautiful. It's because winter, for a lot of us, maybe not Australians or, you know, our friends in New Zealand who have a whole different Christmas, it's because winter is generally a time when there are no leaves on the trees and you see a lot of white everywhere and you bring in the green into the home. It's
yes,
a bit of
the conifer
right.
is a symbol of constant vigor, eternal
right.
vigor.
And it's actually, you know, the smell and the color and all that other stuff. It's just
absolutely
just people have been decorating their homes with greens and things from the outside. You know, it's not like you're going to claim that bringing in a bouquet of flowers necessarily means that you worship Mother Nature. It's part of the celebration, and it's probably been part of the celebration ever since the first. You know, who knows when it was first celebrated? You know, why they decided to have this day. But it didn't have anything to do with somebody super.
Well, I guess you have to have some rudimentary astrological understanding.
Well, a lot of them, you know, of course we know that there are very, very old structures that show that people know something about what the solstice actually
even
is.
Even the American Indians who had religions that were not sun-based but animal-based
had solstice. They
had
did.
The astronomical understanding, and they did celebrate.
I wasn't aware of this
solstice
before, but I looked it up, and indeed, many Native American tribes do have solstice rituals that are very old.
So as you said, it's really quasi-universal.
Right. Now, I just wanted to say, as I was saying, the green brought into the home honors no god. I mean, Christians can pretend that it does, but it's really kind of ridiculous when you think about it. But so we know that these traditions are much, much older than Christianity. Christians just can't claim it. You know, because Christianity came from the same places that these rituals came from itself. You know, trees, boughs, presents, food, beauty, music, these are all real things. They don't belong to pagans, and they don't belong to Christians.
They don't belong, they originate in pagan traditions.
But no, the presents, the food, the music, all of that stuff, they don't belong to a religion.
No, I'm saying specifically
right.
their use in the celebrations
sure.
of Christmas where
but
are
the word pagan, you know, of course it's kind of
yeah, I understand. The word
not
pagan
specific.
The word pagan is very lazy.
It's like
it doesn't come from one religion.
Right.
It comes from many different traditions.
The word
rituals.
Pagan is related to folk religion. Basically, the early Christians said pagan, they meant like peasant religion, basically. Like, well, we're so high class, and these other people have these terrible religions that we...
I mean, I don't have a list, but I know that if you look it up, there are many different... These things, the tree, the gifts, the turkey, the this and the that, come from many different...
Well, traditions. The turkey...
The colors...
A lot of things just came from the area you live in.
The Christmas decorations, mm-hmm. the mistletoe, they come from all sorts of different...
All around the world
traditions.
As well. They have to.
So it's not like because we say it's pagan, it doesn't mean it's come from one religion and so it belongs to that religion. No, it's an assemblage.
We have a lot of different things we use in our celebrating that they come from countries all over the world, and obviously you know, it can't be claimed by one people, because of course we've added to the tradition over the years, you know, and the biggest things that have been added to these traditions are saints and gods and...
However, I have to stop you there, because we only have 5 minutes until the intermission, so I think you might want to start with the historical aspects.
Well, okay. So why should secular people do this on December 25th?
Yeah, how about you start with that date?
Isn't December 25th Jesus' birthday? Well, of course not.
He didn't exist.
Of course,
there was no Jesus.
Right.
Even, so how could it be Jesus' birth date?
But even in scripture, if we say December 25th is Gandalf's birthday, well, that's not in the book. Well, it's not in the Bible either. Now, Jesus' birthday is not, of course, on the 25th or on the 6th, which is where the Romans had placed it. Jesus' birthday is not December 25th or the 6th any more than Mithra or Dionysus or Adonis or Amun-Ra's birthday is on December 25th or January 6th, because, of course, they don't exist. December 25th, of course, is associated...
How dare you blaspheme Amun-Ra!
December 25th is associated with the solstice. It's associated, of course, with the sun, which is real, which is not a god, which actually exists. But why did December 25th become Jesus' birthday? Well, one thing we do know from records is it was moved from the 6th to coincide with an already 100-year-old holiday, which was an amalgamation of different pagan birth dates, including Mithra, and they called it Sol Invictus. They moved it, why? In order to try to stop festivities altogether. Not to have people celebrate Jesus' birth, no. To stop people from celebrating. Christians didn't celebrate birthdays. Such a holy day would surely not be associated with binging, drinking, gambling, dancing, and sex, would it?
Well, for one thing, they would celebrate his death date, not his mm-hmm. birthday.
But for hundreds of years since then, the church had failed, completely failed in its attempt to stop that kind of human nature. So, again, Christmas or solstice is a part of human nature as people who live in those parts of the world.
Well, it's part of human nature, but you need to have a little knowledge, though.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree that it's part of human nature.
But this is a point I want to drive home. Why is it on December 25th? Not to celebrate Jesus' birthday. To stop celebrating.
The December 25th was actually was set by Emperor
Aurelius.
Aurelius, that's right.
Jesus is
for Sol Invictus, as you said.
If that day was the birth of Jesus, you're not to celebrate because those days are not celebrated, like you said.
Right.
This is a holy day. Therefore, they thought, well, people couldn't possibly want to do that. That would be just wrong. Ha, 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 ha. Well, I guess it just didn't work. So, whatever you want to call it, Christmas is secular. The Christians had been trying to dump Christmas, to get rid of it, and they did. When they threw it away, I'm saying secular people or capitalists, as I will explain later, fished it right out of the trash. And then what did we do? We made it ours, and we tried to share it back with the Christians. But when we did that, it seems like the Christians of the world saw how great it was, and they tried to take it back.
And now they're trying to steal it back like they do now every other holiday.
They're pretending that they never tried to trash it in the first place.
Just like they try to steal Sol Invictus from the Romans to make their own... Jesus' birthday bullshit. Now they're trying to steal Christmas again, second time.
Well, see...
You can't stop those bastards.
You see, what happened was when business people
those
took
fuckery,
it back...
You can't stop them.
...took it back from the Christians who had outlawed it, you know, outlawed it at least twice in major ways, they revived it because that's what people wanted and because it was responding to a need of people who were in pain and having a lot of trouble. And after we come back, I will explain what that's all about.
So we have an intermission coming.
Yeah. This is about the whole Merry Christmas brouhaha. And it's a little clip from CNN with somebody from Air America, Seth somebody or other. I can't remember his name.
Oh, dear.
No, he's great, though, and he's arguing with...
Oh, you mean the Jewish guy?
Yeah. He's arguing with the, you know, American Family Foundation jerkwad. I don't remember his name, but you will...
Oh, dear.
You'll be able to decipher what's going
Prepare
on.
Prepare your barf bags.
And it is edited just for the more interesting parts, so.
Prepare your barf bags. We'll be right back.
It's time for intermission, boys and girls. Take a deep breath. Relax.
Well, listen, you know, as far as the war on Christmas goes, I feel like we should be waging a war on Christmas. I mean, I believe that Christmas, it's almost proven that Christmas has nuclear weapons, can be an imminent threat to this country, that they have operative ties with terrorists. And I believe that we should sacrifice thousands of American lives in pursuit of this war on Christmas. And hundreds of billions of dollars of taxpayer money.
Well, Sam, is it a war on Christmas, a war on Christians, a war on over political correctness, or just a lot of people with way too much time on their hands?
Well, I would say probably, if I was to be serious about it, too much time on their hands. But I'd like to get back to the operational ties between Santa Claus and Al-Qaeda.
I don't think that exists. Bob?
Well, we have
Help
intelligence.
Me out here.
We have intelligence.
You have intel. Right. And where exactly does your intel come from?
Well, we have tortured an elf. And that's it's actually how we got the same information from Al-Labi. It's exactly the same way the Bush administration got this info about the operational ties between Al-Qaeda and Saddam.
This is actually a very serious subject because a lot of people are waking up to realize that the war on Christmas is really the culmination of a war on faith. And the idea that the public square has to be cleansed of any religious expression.
Yeah, well, Kara, I mean, listen, I would like Bob to tell me who is the person who has been offended by someone saying Merry Christmas to them. I've never met that person. I don't celebrate Christmas. But if someone says Merry Christmas to me, and I either think, well, it's a little bit odd. It's like me saying happy birthday to you on my birthday. But, you know, no one cares. But I'll tell you this. As we wage the war on the war on the war on the war on Christmas on our radio show, News Corp, Fox News, those people who have started this entire war on Christmas meme, fake war, they're having a holiday party. President Bush saying happy holidays. Tokyo Rose, Laura Bush, saying happy holidays to her dogs in the video. I'm sure you've seen it. I mean, these are the things that we should be talking about. When we are waging this war in Iraq, we should be equating it to the war on Christmas. What else would Bob Knight have an opportunity to do? How else would he get on television?
You know, this would be funny, except it is serious to a lot of people who have seen their faith cleansed from the public square systematically.
Well, are you suggesting, Bob, that someone can't celebrate Christmas in America? I mean,
I'm
tell me about the person who can escape these
get a word in here.
But
well,
I do agree with Bob.
Yeah, you are.
I do agree with Bob that I think what should happen is companies should calculate how much money they're getting from people who are celebrating Christmas and provide exactly that much amount of Merry Christmas, because that is exactly how I would want any type of religious holiday to be celebrated. Bob, have you ever protested Martin Luther King Day not being celebrated? I mean, do you resent when people don't say Happy Martin Luther King Day a month out in advance?
You know, when the Nazis moved into Austria in 1936.
Oh, that is a...
You know, when the Nazis moved into Austria in 1936.
Oh, that is a...
You know, when the Nazis... You know, when the Nazis... You know, when the Nazis...
Okay, intermission's over. The show must go on.
Okay, is everyone all right from that?
Ew. That was very disturbing.
Anyway, let's move on.
Yeah, let's.
Okay, last year I talked about what people did to celebrate Christmas in the middle and late Middle Ages. This is the basic idea. In the wintertime, The alcohol became, at Christmas time, the alcohol became ripe. The red meat became plenty. It was time to eat it before you had to cure it. And the cold temperature allowed you to do that, but you didn't want it frozen, right? And what other part was there? The drink and the meat and the cold temperatures allowed for a lot of people cuddling up together. So that was a part of the celebration. And they had a tradition of wassailing, which meant basically young guys would go to other people's houses and demand food from rich people. Because it was the season of misrule, which kind of turned convention on its ear, and guys dressed up as girls, they're mummers. There's a lot of mumming tradition in Ireland Canada.
In what time period are we talking about here?
Well, I'm talking about from the Middle Ages to about the 1620s.
Okay.
But something happened not just in the United States, but also in England. The Cromwellian Revolt brought a stop to this, as well as it did in Puritan New England, because the church said specifically that this was pagan, it was crass, it involved too much drinking, too much gambling, and everything that Christianity was not. So therefore, Christmas celebration was a thing of the past for a good while. Except for with cultures like Germany and Scandinavia and the Maritimes, and there are a lot of people that were still doing it, like the mummers, people in Nova Scotia, for instance. The Puritans couldn't seem to keep them down. Well, so we didn't really have Christmas in America, and it wasn't such a big thing in England until there were movements to bring it back, and the movements were not really Christian movements. Now, we're already in the early 19th century in New York City. If you've seen Gangs of New York, you kind of get an idea of what kind of a place New York City was. It was pretty much violent. Street gangs ruled New York City, and the police and the fire department were also street gangs. But I have a newspaper quote from 1772, and it's a little bit before, but this is kind of what the early 19th century was like. It says here, the problems at Christmas were caused by the assembling of Negroes, servants, boys, and other disorderly persons in noisy companies in the streets, where they spend the time in gaming, drunkenness, quarreling, swearing, etc., to the great disturbance of the neighborhood. The behavior of these rowdies was so highly scandalous, both to religion and civil government, that it is hoped the magistrates will interpose to suppress the enormity. Now, some of these guys got together what they called Calathumpian bands. They would go about pretty much vandalizing and destroying not only rich people's estates, especially at Christmas, where they want to get their good beer and stuff, but also they would go into black communities, torch their churches, vandalize their neighborhood, and pretty much beat all the black people up that they saw. Because at the time, race relations were not that easy at the time, and a lot of these gangs saw black people as basically the cause of a lot of problems, especially if you were, I suppose, an Irish gang who were also discriminated against, and I'm sure a lot of people would like to say, they're only responding to their, people were discriminating against them, so they had to beat people up, I don't know, whatever, but part of this Christmas mummering and Calathumpian bands was also a social protest, and a lot of labor disputes, and basically, though, these guys are not liberal college students that are protesting the war, like I said, going and destroying black neighborhoods.
You should go ahead now and then talk about the commercial.
Well, let me say what happened was there's all this social unrest, and there was a man named John Pintard who was part of groups that started anti-poverty foundations because they felt that poverty was the cause of a lot of this stuff. John Pintard blamed Christmas violence, get this, on Protestantism.
And, well, there you go.
Well, he and a lot of other people felt that the Christmas celebrations, which were being suppressed, of course, and were only celebrated by the criminals, was a safety valve for people to let off their frustrations of this hard life that up to now had been a life of working in the fields and now is working in the factories. And they felt that this kind of celebrating, this kind of mistral was a safety valve to let off steam. He and some others began what was called the St. Nicholas campaigns of New York City. They wanted to bring about what they called a kinder, gentler Christmas. And some of the people in these groups, it was basically a group of capitalists, a group of industrialists. And there was Thomas Nast and Washington Irving, poets and writers who illustrated Santa Clauses that had nothing to do with St. Nicholas. And, of course, one of the most famous of these capitalists was called Clement C. Moore, who wrote, you know, A Visit from St. Nicholas. Clement C. Moore mentioned in his poem, if you don't know it, that Santa Claus had 8 reindeer, and he called them by name. Now, of course, there's no mention of any 8 reindeer with St. Nicholas, but when you do know that Thor had 2 goats that pulled his thread called Cracker and Gnasher, you begin to get the idea that maybe Clement C. Moore was drawing from German tradition for his Santa Claus. And he and Thomas Nast and Washington Irving took St. Nicholas, who was stern and thin and kind of scary, and made him fat and jolly and very small, and promoted the at-home children's Christmas, which was good for business and was definitely good for life in general in New York City. So the years went on. This thing really took off. In England, of course, this kind of thing was helped by writers such as Charles Dickens, who was protested by who? Christians, for writing a story that was too secular, too crass, and too commercial. And Charles Dickens was, they said his celebrations in his book were too pagan. But basically, they were bringing back the pagan celebrations and sort of toning them down from the rowdy, drunken, young guy kind of thing that they used to be. Thus, the battle for Christmas was temporarily won, to the dismay of Christians who complained about this sort of commercialization and lack of Christ. And, of course, they haven't stopped complaining ever since. But right at that moment, that is when Christmas was commercialized. And thus, this commercialization of Christmas saved it.
So what you're saying, what you're saying is that the complaint of commercialism is actually very much allied with the Christian attempt to retake Christmas and give it Christian sacrificial values.
Well, it wasn't going to be Christmas. The Christians didn't want the celebrating.
Yeah, I'm talking about now.
There were certain moderates, including Benjamin Franklin, who were proposing a temperate Christmas.
I'm talking about now.
But nowadays, it's really kind of the same thing. But if you want to talk about commercialism...
Yeah, like I said, there's the whole anti-commercialism rhetoric
now,
that we hear
about. What I'm claiming is commercialism saved Christmas from Christians who had outlawed it, who had wanted to make it some kind of church service observance, if anything at all. And right at the very outset of Christmas was commercialism, because it began at a time when we had industrialization, when we had the middle class, when the middle class were the center of the Christmas celebrations. Everything that we think about that's too commercial is that happened at the very beginning of Christmas as we know it, which is basically the 1860s or the Victorian era.
So what is the meaning of Christmas today?
Well, I say that I don't know if there's really any such thing as the meaning, you know, a true meaning of Christmas. I think that a person has to make meaning for themselves. I would say that Christmas
I don't think that's quite true.
I think Christmas is sort of a flaming, warm, friendly star in the middle of the cold and dark time.
Definitely.
And that's consuming is at the heart of it, basically.
Definitely.
And, you know, if you want to complain about all these aspects of commercialism, you have to go back to the Victorian era where they consumed like you wouldn't believe.
But I think
ostentatious in their consumption, well, we can go back to the Victorian times and people would barf at the thought of some of the things, the way that people celebrated their Christmases, the excess that they could possibly have. You know, it's not, we can't go back to the old days and find a Christmas that's not commercial.
I think it's unbelievable that people complain about commercialism. They're complaining about people giving each other gifts.
Right.
About putting up trees and decorating them. What the fuck is wrong with you?
If there's anyone who has...
What the hell is wrong with giving gifts to people?
If there's anyone who has absolutely zero cause and zero right to complain about commercialism, right now it would be Christians.
Oh, yeah, they do it a lot.
Now, right now what Christians are complaining about is the lack of commercialization of their Christ. They want their Christ associated with all the products that you sell at this time of year.
Mm.
Now, if anybody's good at commercialism, it's Christians. And if you want to be proven that, all you have to do is go, like I say, over and over again, go to a Christian bookstore. And you don't have to just go to a Christian bookstore, but Christians are very good at selling their deity. They make their deity look like a rock star. They make him a little child. They make him a little chubby little cherub. They sell angels. They turn their warrior death swordsmen into cute little things that follow us around and keep us from getting hit by cars or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They have, you know, statues with clocks in their belly. They buy graven images of their god. They make lamps and they make snow globes, and they make hockey star Jesus and stickers and calendars and videos and rock music and everything else. So Christians, if I hear a complaint of commercialism, they need to have a duct tape slapped on their mouth.
Let's face it, they have Santa envy.
Definitely.
They have Santa envy, but let me tell you, I know Santa Claus and Jesus, you are no Santa.
Well, Bob Smith said, how can the
two even be in the same realm, on the same game?
Well, Christians are very good, like I said, about commercialism. They made a little Santa kneeling at the manger just to say, look, the pagan god is not as good as...
I think that's sacrilege.
...as our pagan god, basically.
Santa doesn't discriminate.
Right, when you sit on Santa's lap, he doesn't ask you what your religion is.
I think Santa Claus is superior in all aspects. But anyway, yeah, they just try to erect Jesus as a new Santa Claus. It's really ridiculous. What about...
But as far as complaining about commercialism, this is what I'd say. I say, you know, reveling in gluttony, flashiness, experimenting with the foreign, you know, like taking parts of Christmas from other traditions, that is, and then experimenting with the pagan, it's celebrating the bounty and beauty of the world that we live in. which is the exact opposite of Christianity, which is rejecting the pleasures of the flesh and rejecting the ways of the pagan. Like putting up a Christmas tree and having a feast. That's why atheists should celebrate definitely. Christmas.
I did on my blog, I look at all the values of Christmas. For example, feasting, love, family,
friendship, beauty.
I forgot, but I list them all on my blog.
Now, there can definitely be abuse to that. And we know because there's a lot of schlock out
there. Giving gifts.
There's
but none of these values have anything to do with Christianity. Right. In fact, they contradict Christianity.
There is a lot of schlock out there, and there's a lot of things that are associated with Christmas that people are not happy with. And I have to say, you know, you're not forced to be crass at Christmas time. People feel obligated by their families. They feel...
How can you be crass to give gifts?
Right. Well, I'm saying people complain because they say, well, you give gifts that don't mean anything to you and don't mean anything to anybody. Well, you made them that way. Right. This is the remedy to that.
You're the one who buys the
fucking
gifts.
This is the remedy that do not buy gifts that don't mean anything to you.
And
do not buy gifts that don't mean anything to the other person. If you don't want to buy presents, don't buy presents. If you don't want to feel obligated by your family members, stop feeling obligated because you're not.
It's like whatever, atheists are supposed to be critical thinkers. What happened to that?
Think critically at Christmas.
Think.
Don't go into debt. Don't go into hawk.
No.
Do things that make you happy. And if they're not just exactly the way you think Christmas is supposed to be, well, you're an atheist. You should understand that you don't have to do things you are supposed to do. You should
exactly.
be creative enough because you already live your life in a way that, you know, that you're not supposed to. And a lot of people, they kind of go into a second childhood at Christmas and they forget everything about their adult life and start feeling all these pressures. And that, I'm sorry, it's not Christmas's fault. It's not Christmas's fault. It's a psychological thing that you're going to have to deal with. And it's really healthy to create things. If you don't want to celebrate, you know, it's hard to escape all these other people. But it's like you have to stop worrying about what other people are doing. You have to stop worrying about what other people are doing that you perceive to be really awful and crass and commercial. You know, it's like if you worry all day about what other people do that you find distasteful, you might as well just kill yourself now because there's going to be a lot of people out there doing stupid things. We know that.
I think it's better because of the idea of the magic of Christmas. It's like Christmas past, no coming back to haunt you.
This is very important because... Mm-hmm. And this is not just for atheists, obviously, but a lot of people who find Christmas somewhat important, either bad or good, they have created for themselves something called the perfect Christmas that they find exists somewhere in an ideal world, like the Plato world or whatever. The perfect Christmas exists somewhere, and we're going to try to find it. You see that in parents who put their children on Santa's lap. They're screaming and crying, and those parents are yelling at their kid, saying, "Smile, God damn it, you smile or else. Santa's not going to come, and Santa's not, you know."
Mm-hmm.
These parents want the child to cry, not to cry. They want the child to look beautiful. Why? Because they want to look back at that photograph and say, "That was a nice Christmas."
Right.
Look, we're a normal family. We do everything that we're supposed to do. I think that perfect Christmas is come up with maybe in the mind of a child, maybe when you were a kid, what was really going on may not have been what you remember. What was really going on is not anywhere near as good as what a child can come up with in his head, because the anticipation of Christmas is better than, you know, what you usually get to have. Because a kid... You know, in a kid's imagination, we're talking about those sugar plums dancing in their head.
Mm-hmm.
I know. And yeah, people strive, but the thing is, I think people strive too hard. They kill themselves trying to do it. For other people or whatever, you know, maybe there's this value of sacrificing yourself and hurting yourself in order to make others happy, which, you know, this is not part of our value system. You know, personally, we try to go with the principles of individualism and egoism in order to make ourselves happy. And I think that's the best way to go. And I suppose it could be different for parents, but it can't be different for parents if they're going to go into Hawk in order to buy their kids stuff. Because we know what kids' desires aren't always very practical. They think they want stuff that they probably aren't going to want later. But this is when you're going to have to, you know, start getting creative about it. And I don't really have, you know, a lot of advice for parents, because I'm not a parent myself.
Well, I think a second part of it is that, which is very deplorable, is that we don't teach our children about economy, and which is very important. And you know, many adults are in debt and don't really understand how bad that is for our life.
Well, children and parents alike also need to understand why they don't have to live the way you're supposed to.
Right.
It's like the things.
So it's like it's Christmas time,
TV,
you know. Buy.
Things people see on TV aren't necessarily what you have to do.
Right.
And you know, there are a lot of things that people do that you can do every year that probably make children just as happy. When I think back at how happy my parents made me at Christmas, I gotta tell you all, we were poor. We ate government cheese. My dad was a teacher, and my mom was a substitute. Okay. So, I'm saying, you know, this commercialism destroying the magic of Christmas, the magic of... Okay, let me put it this way. If you're complaining about the commercialism killing the magic of Christmas, then the Christmas that you see in your head never, ever existed. And it can't as an adult, because when you're a child, things are different. And what you remember may not be real. And there never really existed this perfect Christmas that Bill O'Reilly is imagining from his childhood. Because when you're a child, you don't have to work to buy those presents. You don't have to cook the turkey.
Exactly.
You know, this was all given to you. It's like, well, you really can't go back to your childhood. But one thing you can do is you can do the things that make you happy. And for kids, if you do them every year, it makes it all the better. And there's some traditions that I have that I don't know about a lot of other people having.
Right.
But that's what makes Christmas great.
And that's what makes this show great, and it's the end of it. Why don't you go ahead and give our coordinates?
Okay, our website is hellboundalley.com, and you can email me at allie@hellboundalley.com.
Okay, don't miss the live show. Go to the archives, check out our new show, Vox Populi, like we said. And on December 24th, we will have another Christmas show on the Jesus Myth with Ramius Ixon.
Cool.
Who specializes in ancient Near Eastern history. We're going to talk about the historical and archaeological context of the Jesus myth and what makes good and bad mythicism. And after that, our next show is going to be live on January 1st on the new year, featuring the musical stylings of Bowtie Barstow. And after that, we'll have a great lineup of shows for January.
Mm-hmm.
So check it out. Goodbye. See you soon.
Merry Christmas.
want to, yeah!